Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, December 2nd, 2015. Authorities in Juba dismiss UK's travel ban on South Sudan.
Which place is not safe now in the world? The British Parliament now is arguing the security threatened. Are we going to issue travel ban to UK? In America, in Europe, we have been in Paris. Which part of the world is absolutely a paradise?
And rebels of the SPLM in opposition are insisting that the advance team is not too big.
If you look at 560 divided by 10 states, you will end up having 56 people going to a state. They are not going to be in Juba alone. It is peacetime. We wanted to make sure that everybody is getting the message of peace from us and from the government and from all the stakeholders.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's foreign minister is asking the British government to reconsider withdrawing a travel ban on South Sudan. The United Kingdom Foreign and Commonwealth Office issued a travel advisory this week, advising its citizens not to travel to South Sudan, citing insecurity in many parts of South Sudan. Barnaba Mariel Benjamin says the travel ban is aimed at scaring international community from helping the warring parties to implement the peace agreement. Mariel says there are no cases of insecurity in South Sudan.
They should have discussed with us these things before really making any travel ban. All the British citizens who are in South Sudan today, there is no record of any British citizen that has been ever killed in South Sudan. So why issue such a travel ban? In fact, it is discouraging. It is putting an obstacle to the implementation process.
And
people must be patient.
Yes, Mr. Minister, Juba could be safe, but other places are not. There are reports of gunship attacking people in Mundri and Eastern Equatorial State. These gunships are coming from where?
Which place is not safe now in the world? The British Parliament now is arguing the security threatened. Are we going to issue travel ban to UK? In America, in Europe, we have seen in Paris. Which part of the world is absolutely a paradise? I think that is not fair on the peace process in South Sudan. South Sudan is a country coming out of conflict. So what they should have done is to encourage and point out if there is delay in the implementation. We have already, the chair of JAMAT, former President Francis Mohai, is on the ground asking for support so that he can do his job. The President Salva Kiir Mayardit has given complete commitment of the implementation and has gone ahead to encourage other areas. The incidences you get in Equatoria or in Lakes or wherever, these are isolated incidences of individuals, criminal acts. They are not acts that are targeting anything. These are acts of terrorism in some cases.
And that is why the United Kingdom is saying they cannot guarantee the safety of their citizens in a country where there are criminal cases.
No, but the criminal cases are, which country has no criminal cases, including Britain and America, where you are? What happens in New York every day? Do you have a travel ban? The criminal cases happen everywhere. That's why they have judges. That's why they have the police to take care of that. So I think it is not fair on the peace process and on the Republic of South Sudan. We would urge the Her Majesty's government to continue to encourage the peace process as they have been doing. I think that is more important than scaring people off. I think that is it is actually just discouraging the peace implementation of the peace agreement, because they have seen now peace agreement is going to be implemented. The parties are moving towards implementation. So there are some people who don't want to see that happen.
Yes.
That is the purpose.
Yes, Mr. Minister, I hate to sound sarcastic, nor do I want to be a prophet of doom, but we hear stories or reports from some parts of your country that it's not safe. For instance, take Juba. People in Juba are living in fear. They say at night it is not safe.
This is an exaggerated sort of thing of those few criminals. some of whom, by the way, that have been actually arrested. Those criminal cases, they have been arrested. And in fact, the situation is getting better. So I think there's a lot of exaggeration in the rumor mongering that is picked up. And I think that is the problem.
And how is the government trying to address the problem? How is the government trying to address the problem?
I would invite you to come to Juba to come and have an experience of this yourself. What is this so serious criminal cases in Juba that everybody is living in fear? That's not true. There are cases that happen. But the police is doing its work. The security sector is doing its work to arrest those elements who are causing those criminal cases of theft by attacking and killing people. For example, out of robbery. Most of those cases are robbery cases.
If you are given an opportunity to speak to your people in Juba who are saying that it's not safe, what would you tell them?
I say it is just rhetoric. It's rhetoric of those people who want to sabotage the implementation of the peace process. What do they mean things are not safe?
That's South Sudanese Foreign Minister Barnaba Marielle Benjamin. He was speaking to me from Johannesburg, where he's attending the China-Africa meeting. A former South Sudanese lost boy is settling into his new job with the U.S. State Department as a foreign service officer. Guy Ayuen Nyok says he is both humbled and excited to embark on his new journey in Venezuela. Ayen Bier has the story.
Nyok dreamed of becoming a public servant as a young boy growing up in Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp. At just 29 years old, he's defied many odds. Nyok was forced to flee his homeland during the Second Sudanese Civil War and eventually made his way to Kakuma refugee camp. Later, he was sent to the United States along with thousands of other lost boys. Today, he works in one of the highest diplomatic missions in the world. He says growing up in a refugee camp didn't stop him from pursuing his goals.
I knew that I wanted to be many things, and I tried to keep a good balance on my academic performance because I wanted to open up opportunities for me to be able to do anything that I would later decide to do.
Nyok and his brother resettled with a family living in the U.S. East Coast state of Virginia in September 2001. Within 4 years, he finished his high school classes with a perfect 4.0 grade point average, which is the equivalent of receiving all A's in every class. He says receiving perfect scores helped him enroll in a good university. Nyok was accepted into the Virginia Commonwealth University, where he studied international relations and economics. Upon completing his studies in 2010, he was accepted into graduate school at the University of Illinois, where he received a master's in economics. Nyok says during this time, he couldn't help but reflect on his early childhood experience at the Kakuma refugee camp.
Where I live at the refugee camp, there were many refugees from many Eastern African countries. So I was always concerned about the conflict that happened in many countries and how the international system, how other countries, you know, can help contribute to a solution.
Nyok says while growing up, his role models were the humanitarian workers and diplomats who came to take care of them in the refugee camp. He says from a very early age, he knew he wanted to be exactly like them.
And I felt that the treatment that they gave me and they gave to the other refugees in the refugee camp was something that really captivated me. I really admire, you know, the respect and dignity that they showed, you know, the people that were in such difficult situation.
Nyok says refugees around the world should be treated with nothing less than the same respect that he and his family received in Kenya. As tens of thousands of migrants and refugees continue to flee Syria and other countries in North Africa, Nyok was asked to speak to a panel on migration in Geneva last week. He says UNHCR and the International Organization for Migration understands the difficult journey refugees and migrants are facing. Nyok also says it is important that humanitarian aid agencies be granted access to the millions of migrants and refugees trying to escape unlivable conditions in their home countries. Nyok says he is eager to begin his work in Venezuela, a country that has not had the best relations with the U.S. in recent years.
I'm very excited to embark on this journey of public service and be able to do the same that was done to me 14 years ago when I was a refugee in a different country. I'd like to, you know, do that for other countries and for other people in need in other countries. And also for American citizens that find themselves abroad in difficult situations.
In February 2014, The Venezuelan government ordered three American diplomats to leave the country on charges of promoting violence. A series of protests, political demonstrations, and riots began in Venezuela due to the country's high levels of urban violence, inflation, and chronic shortages of basic goods. Nyok leaves for Caracas, Venezuela in July. In the meantime, he'll be taking Spanish classes at the U.S. State Department so he can communicate directly with citizens and government officials. He says he is looking forward to helping the people of Venezuela. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Some European countries are rejecting asylum applications from Eritrean refugees despite evidence they face imprisonment and torture if they are forcefully returned to their country. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Eritreans are the third largest group of refugees arriving on Europe's shores after Syrians and Afghans. Stefan Simanowitz of Amnesty says the vast majority are young men fleeing oppressive national service.
Children from the ages of 17, 16 are forced into conscription. It's meant to last 18 months, but in reality can go on for indefinite periods. We spoke to people who had left after being in conscription in national service for 10, 15 years, others who'd had family members conscripted for over two decades.
A UN commission of inquiry earlier this year described Eritrea as one of the world's most oppressive regimes. The Eritrean government denied the accusations made in the report. Amnesty says the conscription amounts to forced labour, and anyone trying to evade or escape it is detained in appalling conditions.
If they're seen or caught, they can be shot and killed, they can be arrested, they can be tortured. Many of them are locked up in cells, underground cells, or in shipping containers for long periods as punishment for trying to avoid conscription.
Amnesty says the same fate would likely face Eritreans who had fled overseas but then forcibly returned. Despite this, some European countries, including Britain and Denmark, have begun rejecting the majority of Eritrean asylum applications. The British government changed its advice in March, claiming that Eritrea is safe for migrants to return to after leaving illegally. Simanowitz says they must change course.
The situation for Eritrean asylum seekers is a desperate one, and they must be given safe haven.
Speaking at last month's EU-Africa Migration Summit in Malta, French President François Hollande said the Eritrean regime must be confronted. He said the world needs to put maximum pressure on Eritrea because what is happening is extremely serious. Nobody is talking about it. It is a country that is becoming empty of its own population. Despite Britain and Denmark's approach, Eritrean refugees were among the first to be relocated from Germany to Spain under the European Union's new migrant plan. Each European country sets its own rules on asylum. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You are tuned to the South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the latest statistics on HIV infection in South Sudan. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what motivates you to be successful?
I have a family, yeah. I have my daughter, my relatives, my parents, they depend on me. That's why I have to work very hard to support them, to help them.
Successful people motivate me to be successful. If I look at people like the businessmen, like Bitatura in Uganda, if I look at businessmen in the world like Bill Gates, such successful people really motivate me to also work hard and become successful.
What motivates me to being successful? I want to make my mark, and I do not want to say I've taken a path that many have taken. I want to walk a road. I want to create my own path.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The SPLM in opposition is insisting on sending a huge delegation to Juba this week. A senior member of the rebels loyal to Riek Machar says his party is sending 560 people to Juba. Ezekiel Lolgathquot says the advance team is expected to arrive in Juba on Friday. He says his party is still pleading with IGAD Plus member countries to transport the advance team from Pagak to the capital.
We have been waiting for the logistics, especially the transportation, accommodation, and all the preparation for the delegates to go to Juba. We have received a communication from the U.S. Special Envoy, Ambassador Booth, Donald Booth, who told us that the U.S. is willing to support 53 people only instead of 560. After communication with my chairman, Dr. Machar, they have agreed, like Ambassador Booth and Dr. Machar, that Dr. Machar will send the list to him, to the U.S. government, and the U.S. will reconsider supporting all the delegates.
But let me ask you one question. Why are you sending 560 people to Juba? What are these people going to do in Juba?
Very good. It is actually a very good question, John Tanza. If you look at 560 divided by 10 states, you will end up having 56 people going to a state. They are not going to be in Juba alone. It is peacetime. We wanted to make sure that everybody is getting the message of peace from us and from the government and from all the stakeholders. They are not going to be based in Juba alone. They will be actually going to all the 10 states. That's one. Two, you know, the member of parliament, those who are in the national parliament, the national legislature, the Council of the States, and also the National Legislative Assembly, those who are with us in the IO, they are going back, and all the state's member of parliament, they are also going back to Yongle, to Upper Nile, to Unity State, and all those areas. So you are having politicians going back. You are having negotiators, those who have been negotiating the peace, going back. You are having also the women going back, the youth going back.
You are having difficulties transporting them from Pagak to Juba. How are you going to take care of them when they go back to their respective areas? Like you are saying, some will go to Bentiu, some will go to Bor, some will go to other 10 states. How are you going to accommodate them in those 10 states?
Well, you know, the agreement is clearly stating that it has to be implemented. And the guarantors of this agreement, they are also obliged to make sure that this agreement is implemented. Part of implementing it is to make sure that the leaders of the agreement are facilitated and are accommodated and are also provided facilities so that they actually implement the agreement as it is. So the stakeholders, of course, Troika, the IGAD Partners Forum, the EU, the African Union, and especially the IGAD Plus, five countries, and China, and also the Arab countries. We are appealing to the world and to all the friends of South Sudan to support this advance team to Juba and to states, and also to support the implementation of the agreement and reconstruction of the Republic of South Sudan.
South Sudan's government spokesperson, Michael Makuye, was saying their responsibility is to receive you from Juba International Airport and put you in hotels. I did not hear him saying that they will transport your delegation from Juba to the other 10 states. I still want to get confirmation from you that indeed the 460, you are not going to Juba only. They will be going to the states. And if they are going to the states, how will they move from Juba to their respective locations?
The agreement is stating that the government will be reconstituted. The government, the national government, and all the 10 states' governments will be reconstituted. So you cannot implement the agreement by going to Juba alone. You must go to all the 10 states. So basically, Michael Makuye is aware that there will be a government in Juba, and also there will be governments in the 10 states.
That's Ezekiel Lolgathkwod, a senior member of the SPLM in opposition. He was speaking to me via a satellite phone from the rebels' headquarters in Pagak earlier today. The chairperson of the South Sudan's HIV/AIDS Commission says there are 193,000 people living with the HIV virus in South Sudan. The commission says an estimated 18,000 youth between the ages of 18 and 24 are infected by the virus. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington.
Esterina Novello says in late 2013, 153,000 people had the HIV infection in South Sudan. That's an increase of 40,000 people within a period of 2 years. Novello says it takes the commission 2 years to come up with the new number of the infected people after testing for HIV. Novello says sexual transmission and mother-to-child transmission are some of the common ways the disease is spread in the country. She says some areas are hard hit than others.
Nationally, it is more in Western Equatoria. It is higher in Yei County, followed by Juba, when you are talking of Central Equatoria. The least state is Northern Barigazal.
Novello says the commission has received a donation of $42 million from the Global Fund. The money will be used to fight the disease for the next 2 years. She says the money is expected to help 2.6 million South Sudanese buy antiviral drugs and educate others on how to stop the spread of the disease.
50% of this money is targeted for the treatment, and the remaining 50% is going to be spread for prevention aspect and community system strengthening, as well as the capacity building of the government institutions.
Novello says they will work with community-based organizations, faith-based groups, in order to reach targeted people in the country. The UN Health Organization and Children's Organization also helps the commission with treatment and building HIV/AIDS centers across the country. WHO and UNICEF also provide technical support to the commission, but Novello says the conflict in South Sudan makes it hard to reach most of the targeted areas.
Places you cannot access by road, either because of insecurity, so it means you have to fly. It's not cost-effective in terms of logistics. And of course, the other thing also, issue of the human resources, that's also need capacity to be improved. Although we do have, but they are not enough.
Novello says the commission is expected to update their statistics next year based on data collected in 2014. For VOA News, I am Tiru Justin in Washington.
Global health experts are gathering in Cape Town, South Africa this week to talk about how to end tuberculosis, which is more common than HIV, the virus that causes AIDS. But research has yielded some good news for TB's smallest, most vulnerable patients. VOA's Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg.
Researchers at the annual Union World Conference on Lung Health in Cape Town announced Wednesday the debut of a child-friendly tuberculosis treatment, a move that affects 1 million children worldwide and could, they hope, strike a serious blow in the fight against this often deadly disease. Dr. Mel Spiegelman, president and CEO of TB Alliance, an international nonprofit organization, told VOA this is a major advance.
For the first time, we have appropriate treatment for the 1 million children who have tuberculosis with a formulation of drug that is easy for kids to take, that tastes good, and that hopefully will make the disease much easier to treat in children.
Until now, Spiegelman says, children have been given cut-up adult pills, which they often reject because of the bad taste. The new treatment is dissolvable in water and comes in flavors like strawberry and raspberry. The new treatment was developed with the help of international aid groups like the World Health Organization and the U.S. Agency for International Development. Spiegelman says that is because major pharmaceutical companies have little financial incentive to develop medicine for TB, which is largely a disease of the poor.
TB is a disease that is intimately linked with socioeconomic status. It's intimately linked with poverty, with crowding, with poor nutrition.
The World Health Organization says the airborne respiratory illness remains one of the world's biggest killers, despite the fact that nearly all cases can be cured. The WHO says TB killed 1.5 million people in 2014. 140,000 of those victims were children. Spiegelman notes that TB also lacks high-profile champions. To illustrate his point, Spiegelman refers to perhaps the most famous TB patient, Fantine, the fictional peasant-turned-prostitute in French author Victor Hugo's 19th-century novel, Les Misérables. But Dr. Lucica Ditu, executive director of the Stop TB Partnership in Geneva, says TB is a very modern threat. She says the disease is on the rise with the emergence of multiple drug-resistant strains.
TB is coming back, and if TB is coming up is a sign of a global failure, because TB is a sign of poverty and misery and lack of nutrition and lack of basic things and, you know, people living in bad condition and being so desperate or unwell that, you know, health remains on the last of their priorities.
She urged international leaders to do more and invest more to fight the disease. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's recap with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. The SPLM in opposition is planning to send a huge delegation to Juba later this week. A top member of the rebels loyal to Riek Machar says his party is sending 560 people to Juba. Ezekiel Lo Gatkolf says the advance team is expected to arrive in the capital on Friday. He says his party is still pleading with IGAD Plus member countries involved in the peace talks to transport the advance team from Pagak to Juba. The government has said that the SPLMIO has not identified which individuals are coming in the advance team, but says it welcomes the team anyway. South Sudan's foreign minister is asking the British government to consider withdrawing a travel ban on South Sudan. The United Kingdom Foreign and Commonwealth Office issued a travel advisory earlier this week, asking its citizens not to travel to South Sudan, citing insecurity in many parts of the country. Barnaba Maribel Benjamin says the travel ban is aimed at scaring away the international community from helping the parties implement the peace agreement. Maribel says there are no cases of insecurity in South Sudan. Finally, the chairperson of the South Sudan HIV-AIDS Commission says there are 193,000 people living with the HIV virus in South Sudan. Of that number, 18,000 are youths between the ages of 18 and 24. Esterina Novello says in late 2013, 153,000 people had the HIV infection in South Sudan. That's an increase of about 40,000 people within the period of 2 years. Novello says it takes the commission 2 years to come up with the new number of infected people after testing for HIV. Novello says sexual transmission and mother-to-child transmissions are some of the most common ways the disease is spread in the country. She says some areas are harder hit than others. She says nationally it's more in western Equatoria and higher in Yei County, followed by Juba when you're talking about central Equatoria. Novello says the commission has received a donation of $42 million from the Global Fund. The money will be used to fight the disease for the next 2 years. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Vulundila by Brenda Fassi. We have been listening to Brenda Fassi with the song Vulundila, which means open the way. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.